This is a recording of Dr. Tom Rozelle for Sunday, April 2nd, 2017. You can listen to this program live every Sunday afternoon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed on this program are not the views of 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle, definitely live in studio, waiting to take your calls on anything you want to talk about, no matter what the problem seems to be with your health. You've tried, you've applied, you've done all the things that you can think of and come up with. You know, nothing that really works. 888-630-9625, 888-630-9625. That's how you find us here in studio today on this absolutely gorgeous, beautiful Washington Day. The sun is out and the weather is going to get warm, and hallelujah, finally. In studio, we're going to talk about something that's unfortunately way too many of you have had the experience of, but to help me talk about it is the one and only the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. Welcome, Harlan.
Hi, Tom. Good morning to you.
So we're going to talk about, well, this is kind of a springboard off of the conversation that you and I and Dr. Sid Shandala had a few weeks back.
Yes, this is.
On surgical procedures and so forth. And we had Dr. Sid in simply because of the fact that he's probably one of the more conservative guys out there. And when he does surgery, he does a great job. But, you know, we made the comment then that out of 10 cases that we send to him, he might operate on one or two before anything else. And he said that chiropractic care and acupuncture and the work that we do with all those things, including nutrition, needs to be tried and looked after first. But nevertheless, what we're talking about today is called failed spinal surgery syndromes. And it can be neck surgery, it can be back surgery, it can be middle of the back surgery, your thoracic spine. And people go into these surgical procedures and fail. And, you know, the incidence rate that I was reading about just recently is that 70% up to 75% of all spinal surgeries across the board are considered failures.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. You know, outside of things like trauma, infection, and cancer, and most of the time those are situations where surgery is necessary because the structure is so unstable. The procedures that we see done are to stabilize degenerative things. So it's a roll of the dice on those, unfortunately.
You know, when you see a patient that comes in, and unfortunately we see way too many of them. I'll give you an example. This woman that I started treating this last week, she came in and she had hip pain, and, you know, with radiation into the leg and so forth. And they told her that, you know, it had to be coming from her back. She went to a well-known neurosurgeon in the area. She had the surgery done, and no relief whatsoever, nothing. Still tremendous chronic pain over 5 years. All kinds of steroid injections, nothing takes place. And now the surgeon tells her, well, the only way that you're going to have any relief potentially maybe is that we have to fuse your entire low back. And, you know, here's a situation where they've already failed once. Now they want to compound the injury exponentially. And I've treated her twice, and she has about 50% resolution of the pain pattern because it was a pelvic problem and instability within the ligament structure.
Yeah, unfortunately, fusion and the low back don't go together quite well, and especially if it's multiple level fusions, two levels, three levels is almost never done because it's such a bad procedure. I think what it comes down to is how strong of a candidate is the patient for this fusion, and a lot of times they're not. They're just doing it because you get paid more to put hardware in the back as opposed to doing something called a laminectomy or a discectomy, and that's a sad comment, but it's true, and there's a lot of literature to back that up.
You know, going back into our archives many, many moons ago, we use a procedure for stenosis and slipped disc, so to speak. We use that as a categorical term, and actually there's so many pieces of that from fully herniated disc to protruded disc to fragmented disc and so forth. We use something called a Cox decompression disc technique, and it's a specialized table for that. And I like it because it's not automatic. You just don't strap the patient in, but you can actually isolate the disc space and make a huge difference relative to the segmental areas. And just with those, out of the patients who've been scheduled for surgery, the spine magazine and so forth, people who have undergone that procedure, the conclusion is that you can save over 65% of these people from surgical procedures, even when they're appropriately necessary.
Yes, certainly that's true. And I think you need to take that a little bit further. And the assumption that when we have a herniated disc or a bulging disc, that's probably a better scenario, a bulging disc, and that's 100% of the time what's causing the issue, that's just not true. There's a lot of pain generators in the spine, the ligaments themselves, the joints. You have to look at the full slate of things, because if you just put all your eggs in one basket that it's going to be the disc, a lot of times it turns out it's not.
You know, most often, I mean, you can put a set of x-rays, and you know this as well as I do. You put a set of films up, and you can see this horrible arthritic, degenerative, stenotic patterns that are sitting there in multiple areas. And the patient has no pain. And yet, you'll get a patient that you take the same set of x-rays, and they're clean. They look great. There's nothing there. The spinal alignment's decent. And the patient is in so much pain that, you know, they're willing to do anything. And they're very suggestible because of that.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of times that's what's the deal breaker, is that they're in an excessive amount of pain, and we don't want to discredit that fact, but that they probably push the procedure because they feel that's the ultimate, way to fix it.
It's unfortunate. We see this type of thing. But, you know, the good news is that so many of these things post-surgically are fixable under the right circumstances. And in the second half of the show, I want to get into that specifically, and what happens when these people present, what can be done for them. This Wednesday evening, the 5th of the month, 7 p.m. at the Results Center for Healing, you're going to present this whole pattern, post-surgical failures, but more importantly, what you can do about them, and are you stuck being in pain the rest of your life? And that's the whole thing, and our short answer is not necessarily.
You know, and I'd like to add to that, this is, certainly this is going to talk about the people that have had the surgery, but I think that this is going to lend a lot of information and light on the people that are on the verge of committing to getting the surgery. So we can go on both ends of the spectrum there, and they're just as important. Certainly, preventing the first person from getting the procedure done in the first place.
You know, the thing that comes to my mind is the old phrase, and when I say this, I'm going to qualify it. It says, when you're thinking about surgery, just say no initially, and make sure that you have multiple inputs and opinions, and find out what else can be done. Because as you've heard me say many times, once you cut, you cut. And it's that procedure of surgery ultimately leaving its own residual of scar tissue and so forth. And are you, as Dr. Sid said, are you a candidate? Are you really someone who needs to go through the surgery? Or, as you've talked about so many times, is it something that can be controlled, get the spine back to where it needs to be, strengthen the core muscles around, change the dietary pattern so the inflammatory levels aren't there anymore, and then move forward and move on from there? It's important that each piece, you don't have to rush off to surgery. If somebody's got a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have to be real careful about that. We're going to get further into depth this Wednesday evening, the 5th of the month. Dr. Harlan Browning will be your host, your presenter at the Results Center for Healing. And those of you who heard him before know that he's going to get into the intimacies. He's great at this stuff. He's going to tell you what can be done. And he's, the end product is he's not going to tell you something that can't be done. So join us. You can call 703-698-7117, 703-698-7117. The Results Center is located about, half a mile at the most off the National Capitol Beltway on Route 50. We're in a brand new facility. Come and see it. It's cool. It's really a neat place. It's very modern. It's very upgraded. It flows. We laugh because everybody thinks it's so much bigger than our other facility, and it's actually 45 square feet less.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm walking about twice as much.
Yeah, well, I won't put the lazy factor out there. Listen, let's go to the phones, and then we'll get back to our topic. Patricia, thank you for holding. You're calling from West Virginia. How can I help you?
This started a couple months ago. I get things stuck in my esophagus. I had an upper endoscopy and barium swallow, and they didn't see anything, but they did stretch my esophagus. It's been 5 days, and I tried to take a medicine capsule last night, and it's still stuck. I do use a pill crusher for tablets, but I'm not knowing if the stretching of the esophagus takes more time or if there's something else going on. Mostly it's capsules, medicine capsules that get stuck, or food. I try to drink, I try to take capsules with a thick protein liquid, and they go down.
Patricia, how old are you?
I'm 69.
Okay, when did this start? How long ago?
In February, I took a Mucinex tablet. It got stuck, and then after that, I started having problems.
Prior to that, prior to February, within the last couple of years, have you had any injuries to your spine, any injuries to your, you know, car accidents, falls, slips?
No, nothing. I've been very healthy, nutritionally, keeping on top of things.
Are you overweight?
No. As a matter of fact, I've lost about 8 pounds since this started.
Okay. Dr. Browning, you got anything to say?
Yeah, the one thing that I think about, especially after an endoscopy has been done and they rule out, you know, bad things like tumors and stuff like that, is esophageal spasms. Okay. And that's where the esophagus, just like any other muscle, has a resting tone. Sometimes it can be too tight. Are you on any medication, specifically diuretics?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Any medications at all?
Promethrium. And I have to be on Sudafed because I had a bad cold and my ears have been plugged, and Claritin, Sudafed PE rather, and then vitamins, just vitamins and basically vitamins.
Okay. Do you get any muscle cramps or any spasms, calf, stuff like that?
Not usually. I've been pretty healthy up till now.
Okay, so the first place I would start as a simple thing to try is there's a special form of calcium called calcium lactate. The lactate form of calcium, which doesn't have anything to do with milk and the lactose in it, has a great affinity for muscle tissue, can be very profound in its ability to relax things. If you can find that at a health food store, it's sometimes tough to find that form. Not all calciums are the same. It's the lactate form. If you could try taking, I'd say about 400 milligrams across the course of the day, maybe 200 in the morning, 200 at night.
May I interject something? At the hospital, they said my calcium was very high.
Okay, so now we're getting more information. So you have, there's definitively, you have some sort of electrolyte imbalance. So you want to look deeper into that.
You know, what I would suggest to you, Patricia, is that, you know, when your calcium levels are that high, it's because you're not getting absorption. So there's several tests that they have to do to rule things out. One of the things that you have to rule out is parathyroid involvement with calcium getting that high in the blood levels. That will cause a lot of the presentations that you have. That's first of all. If the calcium is simply not absorbing, then you have to look at things like magnesium in an equal ratio. If you follow Dr. Browning's suggestion, you do calcium lactate, it should be 1:1. 1 milligram of magnesium, 1 milligram of calcium lactate. Vitamin D3, if you're deficient in D3, you're going to not absorb calcium. Your mineralizations may be low. Boron, selenium, K2, all these things are necessary for calcium absorption. So that's where you would start. But that tells us something. That one fact all by itself is very suggestive, very indicative that you may have some other things that are going on that have to be resolved first.
Yeah, so if
would
you...
Would it be because I'm taking a milk water and a protein drink, that's all I can eat for the last month? Would that be my calcium?
That's probably not it. It probably has to do with the thyroid or the parathyroid relationship. If calcium is high in the blood, that means that it's going to be on the lower side in the muscle. So that goes back to what I was talking about. If we don't have the calcium balance in the muscle, then there's a tendency for the muscle to be in contracture.
Get back to your doctor and ask them to do a parathyroid panel on you and see if that's elevated. You can send me a note at rosellcare.com and I'll see if I can find somebody there for you that does the kind of work that we do and looks at it a little differently than most physicians will. We're coming up to a break. Dr. Harlan Browning in the studio. We'll see you in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle live. Indeed, we're in studio. 888-630-9625. That's how you find us in a gorgeous, gorgeous Washington Metropolitan Day. Get outside and enjoy. It's supposed to get up and touch that 70-degree mark, so have some fun. And I intend to get out and go watch my grandchildren play some lacrosse and things of that nature, so it'll be fun to be outside. Do the same thing. Dr. Harlan Browning in studio, your host, your presenter at the Rozelle Center for Healing this Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. And the nights are, you know, short now because the day is much longer. So you can make it. You can get there. Listen to the professor. He's going to be talking to you about failed back surgical syndromes. You know, neck surgery, back surgery. You know, you still have the pain. Doesn't go away. There's a reason for that. It wasn't the right procedure. There are other things that should have been taken into consideration before that. We talked to you a little bit earlier about, you know, a few weeks ago, Dr. Sid Shandella, neurosurgeon, was our guest, and the three of us, Dr. Browning, myself, and Dr. Shandella, spoke about surgical intervention. And, you know, Dr. Sid said, you know, 10 to 15, maybe 20% of the people that are referred to him will he even attempt surgery on. And he said that everything else needs to be done first. Dr. Browning, let's talk a little bit about the situation. We started out the program saying about 75% of all surgeries fail, spinal surgeries. The pain's still there. Doesn't go away.
Or gets worse.
Or gets worse.
Or they develop something new.
Yep.
So I think I'd like to add to what you just said about it's that the person gets a surgery and it doesn't improve the problem because they weren't a good candidate. Well, there's also other reasons that the person would develop the pain. There can be collateral damage to while we're doing the procedure. In other words, sensitive tissue, neurological, muscular ligamentous can be damaged. Risk of infection, risk of complications under anesthesia, you know, blood loss. I mean, there's a myriad of different things that are involved with that. So those all have to be taken into consideration.
It's important to understand that once you cut. You know, you can't turn it around. It's already there. And once you get into these areas that are not necessarily the most vascular, meaning they don't have a great amount of blood supply, particularly when you get into ligaments and tendons and you start cutting them, or you damage, if you touch any of these synovial, these little sacs that surround these disc areas, these spinal areas, if you touch them with the instrumentation, they have a tendency now to become reactive and produce arthritic degenerative changes. It's in the literature. If you're a smoker, your risk of having post-surgical failure increases because you've decreased your oxygen supply to the disc. If you have an inflammatory reaction, if you're overweight, when you think of inflammation, as I said 1,000 times, think acid, and acid destroys joints. And if you're on aspirin, it destroys joints. If you're on Celebrex, it destroys joints. So we have all these things that we have to be very careful about. You know, Dr. Browning, in our practice, unfortunately, we see the end product, the result of so many people that have done everything first instead of doing something simple. So when you're dealing with the situation of a patient who comes in and they've been through a surgical procedure, and now they're either hurting more, they've lost function, they're immobile. How do you look at this thing? You got a conundrum.
Yeah, you certainly do. You know, I think first and foremost, you need to tease out, is the person still having the same pain pattern they had preceding the surgery that was going on before? In other words, is it different or is it the same? If it's the same, then I would likely say that there was either a misdiagnosis. In other words, what they thought was causing the problem wasn't the case, or there was complicating factors. There was additional things going on. So, a thorough physical exam is something that has to be done. What is the limiting factors? And in my opinion, a person does not become a good surgical candidate until they start showing impairment. Impairment meaning they're becoming weaker or muscles atrophying or they're losing their balance. Those are things that change our functionality as opposed to just a person who's in chronic pain.
It's lifestyle situations. And when you talk about impairment and dizziness, it's not dizziness when you talk about imbalance. Imbalance is that your muscles aren't holding anymore.
Right, and they're going to go out from underneath you. And that's a common description, especially in the older folks who develop slow progressive stenosis, and stenosis is just more or less the nerve is being choked slowly because of arthritis, either be in what's called the lateral recess, that's where the nerves come out on the side, or the central canal, that's where the spinal cord is itself. So that person often doesn't present with extreme pain. They just present with they just can't feel their feet, or they're getting weaker, and you can tell that person by watching them get up out of their chair in the waiting room. I can tell because they'll use their hands to walk themselves up because they don't have the strength
on
their legs.
Yeah. Yeah. The quads are gone. The butt's
exactly
gone. They can't push themselves up. They can't pull themselves back with their back muscles. And you know, go into a surgical procedure of that sort, at because of the scar tissue, because of the irritation of the joint itself, you end up with progressive spinal stenosis. It either, if it was there to begin with, it can advance dramatically. If it wasn't there to begin with, it can become present.
Yes, and unfortunately, when you're talking about someone who's older, almost always you're going to see multiple levels of degeneration. Some areas obviously worse than others. So if you start to fuse those, and that's typically what they would do with a person who has, you know, significant stenosis, the issue becomes the instability that it causes in the segments that still move above it and below it. It's going to make those break down faster, and then the person is going to probably be looking at another fusion 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road.
Yeah, because that motion's got to go someplace.
Yeah, it has. That's the way we're designed, and that's a good thing. But it becomes problematic when we have multiple areas that are breaking down at one time.
Yeah, it's unfortunate when you see these things. And the bottom line is you've got to do everything and anything you possibly can, and you can restore it. And that's the whole piece. I want to leave this segment with simply say it can be dramatically shifted and changed. We're coming up to a break. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, your host, your presenter this Wednesday evening at the Rozelle Center for Healing. 7 p.m., come listen, failed back surgery. We're coming up to the break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to take some more of your phone calls and talk about how you fix this stuff. Don't go away.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, and we are always live because I don't like to do canned shows because then you can't get to us. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, your host, your presenter, Wednesday evening, the 5th of March, April, and at 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing, and he's going to be talking about failed spinal surgeries, you know, that if you've had one. And by the way, if you're contemplating surgery, your doctor's told you that it's necessary to cut you, this program is definitely for you. So come and you will learn from the professor, from the master when it comes to this stuff. He will be able to turn the lights on, so to speak. All you got to do is call Rozelle Center at 703-698-7117, 703-698-7117, and tell the staff that you want to be there, and so we can reserve your seat. And come check out our new digs, man. They're really great. They're really, really lovely. Let's go back to the phones. Karen, thank you for being very patient. Appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Rozelle, and thank you for your great show.
Oh, you're welcome.
I just have a quick question. I listen to you often. What are your thoughts again on getting the pneumonia shot?
Okay, so first of all, let me preface this with, based on clinical evidence and things that, you know, are in the literature that are easily found, my opinion is that they don't work. And actually, the conclusions are that generally they don't have the effectiveness rate for people who they say that are the primary recipients of this, people who are older. You know, they say that everybody should be vaccinated above a certain age. But the problem is that it only hits certain types of pneumonia patterns. Pneumococcal pneumonia is one that it has some effect, but, you know, what's the incidence really of that type of situation? People who have weakened immune systems, and they end up with these inoculations, these vaccines, actually at that point run the risk of getting it from the vaccine because it is an attenuated means the bugs are not dead. They're alive, because that's the only way that it can cause it. Now you're adding other things to the system as well. There's preservatives, there's stabilizers, and so forth. If you have, and if you go through and you look at, there's an interesting article that's published from John Hopkins. I just pulled it up as I'm sitting here talking to you about it. And the conclusion is that they are not as effective as they would like to let you think that they are, particularly for the high-risk groups, which are people who are impaired to begin with. It can actually make things much worse. So what can you do about that? My opinion is that, you know, you have to be very careful, and I'm not giving you an anti-vaccination statement. I'm giving you due diligence before you make any decisions about anything. You want to make sure that your health is good. You maintain good neurological integrity. You keep your diet very alkaline as best you possibly can. You take things like zinc and vitamin C and even echinacea and things that will bring up your immunological reaction. Keep your intestinal tract healthy. The large intestine and the lung work together. So if the gut is bad, which is about 75 to 80% of your immune system, then you're going to have a greater risk of having problems with your lungs. We know straight up that people end up with lung cancer who never smoked but have a bad intestinal system. Their bacteria levels are all skewed up. So if you got to take care of both of those things, the gut's got to be clean, you got to heal it up, you got to make sure the bacteria is good, and guess what? Your health index dramatically rises exponentially and all of that. So, you know, for me, obviously, you know, for my own life and the things I do, I'm not one that's going to step into that model, and I'm of that age group. And, you know, for me, it's simply no. But for other people, again, it has to be on an individual basis. What's your health? How are you doing? Are you willing to do the things that are necessary? But again, do the research, take a good hard look at it, see what it is, make your own decision based on that article that they were quoting in this research study by Zimmerman. Zimmerman et al., it was published back in 2005. That's how far all this evidence and information goes back. But check it out. Another website that you can go to is Mercola.com, M-E-R-C-O-L-A.com. Joe Mercola is an osteopath, and he has referenced information. He's got 26 writers that write for him. I know Dr. Mercola, and, you know, he's – I call him the haberdasher because he sells anything. But the bottom line is his information is really solid. It's good. It's referenced. And you can go in and you can trust what you see. So go to Mercola.com. There's a little block at the top. And you put in, you know, effectiveness of flu vac or pneumonia vaccines. And you'll see article after article after article. Read it through and get the information, get the research. Hopefully that helps you, Karen.
Oh, that was great.
I appreciate your phone call. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. 888-630-9625, my guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, will be speaking to you this Wednesday evening, the 5th of the month, on failed spinal surgery and all the things that go along with that. Let's go to one more call. Colette, thank you for holding on, and how can we help you? Got some bum heels, huh, kid?
Yeah, the spur heels, and then the doctor says it's turned into Achilles tendonitis, something. It is the heel is behind the heel. It's not under, it's behind it. It is that it needs surgery. Was put on boots, special boots for 1 month, but it did not help.
Colette, did you have an x-ray of the Achilles tendon?
Yeah.
Is it calcified?
Yeah.
And how far up does the calcification go?
I don't know.
Okay. So do you stand for a living or do you walk a lot?
No.
Okay, so most...
I sit mostly.
Okay. Most folks that develop calcification in ligaments and tendons like that, kind of goes back to the lady called before about the esophageal spasm, there's a calcium-magnesium imbalance. So what happens is, in your case, you have too much in tissue. She had too much in blood. You have too much in tissue. So I would look at that as well, because there's a fairly good likelihood that the calcification, even if they remove it, will return.
Here's an interesting correlation, Colette, as well, as based on what Dr. Browning was just telling you, because the calcium is in both situations are being put into the tissue. Hers is, you know, was going into one area, yours is going into the other. But because of that, calcium is being spilled into many areas of the body. That calcification can be from what we're talking about with a biochemical imbalance. It's easily, you know, fixed by, you know, doing some intervention, but you got to know more laboratory findings for that. But it also can be because the opposing muscles of the foot are not working the way they're supposed to. If the muscles that pull your toes up are being irritated where the muscle is weakening, so the back muscles, that Achilles tendon area, is pulling it down, first there's going to be swelling and inflammation, and the second response to the body over a long period of time is going to be the infiltration of calcium into that tendon. So you've got to change a couple things. You've got to change the chemistry of the body, but you also have to fix those muscles in the front portion, and that can be anything from the low back all the way down into the foot. So you need to get to somebody who knows what they're doing. Dr. Browning does these things all the time, as any of our doctors do it at our office. But it has to be looked at multidimensionally. You have to treat it multidimensionally. If you fail to do that, you're not going to get anywhere. But you know, the bottom line is a boot, a cast is not going to fix this thing. And there's much more that can be done, but you can't just, you know, sit there and do nothing. Give us a call at 703-698-7117. Same number that you're going to be registering for Dr. Browning's class this Wednesday evening. Let's talk a little bit about, and we've got a couple more calls and we're going to get to them, but Dr. Browning, let's talk about failed back surgery fix. Okay, so we know that, and I know you're going to cover it in detail this Wednesday evening, but let's talk about, you know, first of all, is there a fix? Can it be fixed? Can it, people be brought back to the health? You know, and, you know, what is, in general terms, the process of evaluation that determines the treatment process?
A couple things. First of all, you want to undo as much of the damage that was maybe done during the procedure, and that involves reducing scar tissue formation, inflammation in the area, and the gradual and progressive weakening of the muscles of those structures that surround it. So you've got to reestablish that. And more importantly, you have to come up with forward-thinking protocols to prevent the areas, again, like we said, above it and below it from failing over time. So it's kind of a two-prong approach on it, quelling the inflammation irritation post-surgically and then making sure everything around it is not going to come crumbling down down the road, because unfortunately statistics says that it will.
You know, the thing that is that even with, for example, I'm going to relate a separate situation to this, car accidents. If somebody hits you from behind and your neck goes into hyperextension, the first thing that occurs is you have a crush of the nerves. In that situation, you're going to get irritation, you're going to get swelling, and then you have an overstretch. That's why it's called a whiplash, because when the car stops, your head then, first you get hit backwards, then you get go forward. So you got a stretching capacity. Now, relate that to surgery. Now, obviously, you're not going into hyperextension, but you're also getting tissues that are being played with and moved and joint spaces that are being irritated indirectly from other trauma. Trauma is the surgery itself. So you're going to get an inflammatory reaction around these gliding points. Dr. Browning talked about it earlier. They're called facets. They're the posterior gliding points. And now they can become stenotic, arthritic, and you end up with a worsening of the situation over a period of time, particularly in the presence of bad diets, overweight, lack of strength within the core muscles of the body. And now you have this imbalance because you got a piece of the spine missing, or you have a fusion of the spine, as Dr. Browning said, that not all the motion is going to go above or below it. Now you have problems. You've got to restore that, correct?
Yeah, so you're right, 100%. The amplifying factors of people being overweight, they don't eat right, they just don't move, that just accelerates the whole process. And then you always have to consider, when you're doing a surgical procedure, it doesn't matter if it's orthopedic or if it's a visceral procedure, you're gonna breach healthy tissue as well as damaged tissue. So the ramifications of that is we form scar tissue, and if that scar tissue starts to invaginate around structures that need to move to stay healthy, then we're going to have some problems. The most deep layer of the back muscles are called the multifidi, and when we talk about the core, really the core muscles are those multifidi muscles. We think about the six-pack abs and all those things that we do in the gym, but it's these little teeny-weeny muscles that go from vertebrae to vertebrae that keep them in position and hold the integrity of the spine that are the most important. And unfortunately, when we have laminectomies and these other procedures, unless the surgeon is very skilled, there's going to be damage to those muscles, which just makes the situation down the road even worse.
It's very unfortunate when you see some of these post-surgical procedures. So you have to be careful. You have to make sure you have the right nutrient basis. And you have to put the fire out. It's not okay. And then, you know, Dr. Browning, you and I know because of the work that we do in our specialty called applied kinesiology that everything is interconnected throughout the whole system. So if you're not looking at different parts of the body as well, we know that the cranial plates affect the muscles of the legs and the back and so forth. We know that the feet will affect muscles all the way through. So if the feet aren't balanced, and there's a big bone in the foot called the talus, and it has so many different effects indirectly and directly. It affects the long muscles that come from inside the spine and hook up to the hips called the psoas muscle. It's a filet mignon in a cow. It affects the neck muscles and so forth. And so if that is off-centered, there's nothing that's going to hold in the spinal system. So if you had neck surgery, the neck muscles are off. We know that there's a relationship between organs and muscles, and it's simply because of, you know, you take it from a basic fundamental. The spine comes down, it has 31 pairs of nerves, it divides. One nerve goes to muscle, another muscle goes to the organ. So you've got a communication neurologically that's taking place constantly. And so you have to look at all the pieces, otherwise you're destined to fail. Dr. Harlan Browning, your host, your presenter, Wednesday evening, the 5th of this month, 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center. Call 703-698-7117 and register. Don't do it tomorrow. Do it today. Bill, how can we help you? Thank you for calling.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm a scrawny old man going on 65, and a friend of mine was showing me incline push-ups, you know, where you put your feet up on a chair and you do push-ups and it puts like twice the weight on them. I guess it was around Wednesday or Thursday. I tried those, and a couple days later my right hand started hurting like mad, really, really like mad. And I just, see, I'm wondering, I have, what do you call it, arthritis. My mind went blank. I have some type of arthritis, and it feels as if I cracked a bone or something. And I could just go to an urgent care clinic, you know, and get it checked out. But I wonder. Yeah. I've got medical bills piling up.
Well, let's talk about you know, wrist pain in somebody who doesn't exercise in inclined position, which is kind of, you know, not the place to start.
Yeah. So yeah. You have arthritis in your wrist that you know of, or just you have generalized arthritis?
I've had carpal tunnel syndrome.
Okay. Before. And did you have surgery for that as well?
No. And I've had some flare-ups, but it feels, I mean, I'm incredibly crippled here. And the thing is, I've got a new job starting bright and early Monday morning.
Let's talk about it. There's probably not a lot that you're going to be able to do about it between now and Monday, but there's a lot that you can be able to do about it on a ongoing basis to fix it properly. Dr. Browning, we've got about a minute. You want to address that?
Yeah, between now and Monday, I would definitely ice it and do some light range of motion type exercises that would probably calm it down. But moving forward, if you've had a history of carpal tunnel, let's go ahead and assume that diagnosis was correct, because carpal tunnel is very definitive in the diagnosis, and it really only involves three fingers, your thumb, your index, and part of your middle finger, so that term gets tossed around. You want to strengthen as much as you can in the wrist itself, and specifically the extensors, not so much the ones that flex.
We see so many cases like this. Manipulation, low energy light laser, acupuncture can be extremely effective. It's things that we see with our athletes. It's things that we see with athletes at home. You know, things that you're doing that you shouldn't be doing just like you did, but it can be fixed. We're coming up to that break. We'll be back after some very important message. You know, the people that bring in the program. We'll be right back.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. If you're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle live, as you do every Sunday, 12 noon, you know the drill. If you're on the Eastern Seaboard, that's the time. If you're out in the West Coast, well, do the math. Subtract 3 and every place else that you're. I've got a whole bunch of you listening, and we want to salute and appreciate those of you who are listening to Armed Forces radio networks and online and so forth, and thank you so very, very much. So tell everybody about the program, because we're here to serve you. We're here to give you the information and challenge traditional thought process and make sure that you do the homework. Don't believe anything anybody says, even us. What we want to do, if I've done my job properly, I've provoked you. I've got you to think that maybe there's a different way, or maybe you should be doing something a little bit differently. In studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, my guest today, your host this coming Wednesday evening, the 5th of April, 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing. He's going to be talking about failed back surgical procedures. And those of you who are contemplating surgery, or who your doctor has told you that you're going to have surgery, this is your opportunity to find out what you need to do. Remember when we had Dr. Sid Chandela, who was a neurosurgeon and one of the best as far as we're concerned in the area, does 50% of his time brain surgery, 50% of his time spinal surgery. He said that try everything you can possibly try first before ever contemplating surgery, and only under when your day-to-day activities are persistently impaired should you ever consider that. Not a good thing. We're going to take one more call, and I'm going to wrap it up a little bit. Joe, thank you for being extremely patient.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Are you hearing me okay?
We can hear you perfectly.
So I have arthritis of the spine, and I've been very fortunate as to have very little problems with it, even though I raised eyebrows when I initially came in. The tech and the doctor who reviewed the photographs, they really thought that I should have been in very serious pain and not walking at all. And what prompted that visit I forget the imaging, however they take a look at the spine and saw the growth, was I was just practicing golf. At the time, I was being a supervisor. I'm extremely active. I'm a general contractor. But at that time, for about a year and a half, 2 years, I was supervising.
Joe, we're coming up to the end. I need a question. I'm sorry to push you.
Okay, so sonic spine, is that going to work?
Wait, I'm sorry.
Any type of sonic type of surgery, is that actually going to have any type of long-term effect?
You're talking about the new procedure that they've been advertising on the radio where they're using ultrasound to break up the scar tissue and the stenosis and the adhesion and so forth. The bottom line is that it hasn't been out long enough that there's a lot of long-term studies. I've only seen in our practice one or two patients that have undergone it. The results are not as significant as I'd like to see them. It's a very expensive procedure, and you know the hype around it. Is there potential for it? Yes, there is. If you have one segment that's involved, maximum two segments that are involved, there's things that can be done. There's only a couple guys in the area that are doing this work. Again, there's not a lot of evidence out there. I'm not going to tell you yes. I'm not going to tell you no. I'm just going to tell you that we don't know enough yet. If you ask me 6 months from now, I'd probably have a different look. But there's so much more that can be done with biochemical shifts in the body and procedures of acupuncture and low-energy light laser and gentle manual work and so forth, and things can be turned around. The body is extremely forgiving. So much can be done. But again, Joe, I wish I could tell you more about it, but unfortunately, the information that's available is not as long-term, even short long-term, as I'd like to have it, because I'm the guy that's gonna tell you to do all kinds of avant-garde stuff that other people wouldn't think about. But I'll truly try to find out. Dr. Browning, we've got about 35 seconds for you to tell us what we're going to do on Wednesday evening.
Well, we're certainly going to talk about all the structures that get involved that cause the pain to begin with, the neurological structures, the discs, the ligaments, tendons, the muscles. We'll talk about specific procedures that are commonly done to the spine, the fusions and the discectomies, laminectomies. And then we'll talk about the not so happy outcomes and how we can bring that around and get them stable and get the pain levels under control and project forward so they don't deal with this.
More importantly, to get your life back,
yeah,
and,
exactly,
and to restore it the way it should be and what it was meant to be. We're coming up to the break. We'll see you next week. Love you all. Bye.